Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be looking at, we're diving into a Supreme Court case, Illinois v. Rodriguez. And this one's a kind of a tough one. We're talking about warrantless searches and consent from a third party. And just, all those tricky situations where the law isn't exactly black and white. So get ready to explore the Fourth Amendment in a way you haven't before.
Yeah, that's right. This case really kind of throws a wrench into things, right? It forces us to consider the balance between protecting individual privacy and giving, law enforcement the tools they need.
So picture this. Chicago, 1985. Okay. There's this woman, her name's Gail Fisher. She goes to the cops and says she was assaulted by this guy, Edward Rodriguez. And she says it happened in their apartment, right? She's got a key, unlocks the door for the cops, they go in and boom, cocaine. Open and shut, right?
Well, not quite. That's where things get a little complicated. Turns out Fisher had actually moved out a few weeks earlier, so the cops going into the apartment, even with Fisher letting them in, could be illegal.
Wait, so even though she had a key and all, it wasn't her place anymore. That's a twist. So this is how it ends up at the Supreme Court, huh?
Yeah, exactly. This brings up a really big legal question. Can a search based on a reasonable but mistaken belief that someone can give consent be considered okay under the Fourth Amendment? Like, how far does that reasonableness go,
Yeah, it's a good question. Because on the one hand, you got to protect people's privacy, make sure the cops aren't just busting into places, but you don't want to, like, completely tie their hands either, right?
Absolutely. That's the tension at the core of this whole case. And this didn't go straight to the Supreme Court, by the way. It went through the lower courts first, and they sided with Rodriguez initially talking out the evidence. Then the state of Illinois, they backed that decision up. So it was a big moment when the Supreme Court finally took it on to settle this whole constitutional debate.
Wow, so this was like a serious case. Okay, so what were the main issues the Supreme Court was trying to figure out?
Well, they're dealing with two big things. First, like we said, whether a reasonable mistake about consent is enough to justify a search without a warrant under the Fourth Amendment. And second, could Illinois' own tougher rule on consent stand, even if it was different from the federal rule?
Wait, hold on. You're saying states can have their own rules about searches that are even tougher than the Fourth Amendment?
You got it. That's federalism. It's like this balance, right? The Fourth Amendment sets a basic level for everyone in the U.S., but states, they can add on extra protections for their residents. And in this case, Illinois had done exactly that. So the Supreme Court had to figure out if Illinois' stricter rule could still be applied.
Okay, this is getting interesting. So we've got this state versus federal law thing, plus this whole question of what's a reasonable mistake. What did the Supreme Court actually decide?
Well, Justice Scalia, he wrote the majority opinion, and he really focused on that reasonableness standard in the Fourth Amendment. He was basically arguing that the police, they don't have to be perfect, right? They don't have to be right every time. What matters is if their actions made sense based on what they knew at the time.
So looking back at the facts, what made the police think Fisher could let them in? I mean, she had a key, said it was their apartment, had stuff there. Was that enough for them to be reasonable?
That's a great question, and you're touching on some key points the court considered. Scalia actually addressed that directly. He basically said expecting police officers to do like a full investigation into who owns a place every time they're relying on someone's consent, it would be crazy, right? Like total chaos. He argued the Fourth Amendment needs to work in the real world, striking a balance. Individual rights, but also society's need for law and order.
So Scalia is saying we can't expect cops to be private investigators every time they, show up at a scene.
Right, exactly. That level of investigation would make it almost impossible for them to do their jobs effectively.
But wait, doesn't that seem kind of unfair to Rodriguez? Like, his privacy was violated, even if the police thought they were doing the right thing? Did anyone on the court disagree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Justice Marshall wrote a really strong dissent. He was worried about privacy rights being eroded. He was concerned that this ruling could create this loophole where police just rely on what things look like without really digging deeper, and that could lead to more searches that shouldn't happen, more intrusions into people's homes.
Yeah, I get where he's coming from. It does seem like a slippery slope.
Marshall's point was a reasonable mistake doesn't just erase someone's right to privacy. He felt that unless there's a real emergency, searches without a warrant should be rare, not common. And he didn't think this case was an emergency.
So Scalia's over here talking about being practical, and Marshall's over there like fighting for privacy. Who wins this legal battle?
In the end, the majority went with Scalia with this apparent authority idea. So it means if the cops like reasonably believe someone has the okay to let them search, that's enough, even if they're wrong. They reversed what the Illinois court said and sent the case back down, but this time they had to use this apparent authority rule.
So even though the police were wrong about Fisher, being able to give consent, the Supreme Court's like, it's cool, they were reasonable. That feels a little, I don't know, risky. How do we make sure cops don't abuse this reasonableness thing.
That's the big question, right? And it's something courts are still, you know, wrestling with today. Because what seems reasonable to one person or one cop might not seem reasonable to someone else, especially if it's, you know, their house being searched.
Exactly. It's so gray, you know. But didn't you mention that Illinois had its own stricter rule about consent? What happened to that?
Oh, that's what's so interesting about this whole case. It's not, you know, just about the Fourth Amendment. Remember we talked about states having the power to, like, give more protection to the federal government? Well, what the Supreme Court said, it only dealt with the federal question, like, did the search mess with the Fourth Amendment or not? But even though they overruled the Illinois courts on that, the state could still choose to say, nope, the evidence is out, based on its own laws, the stricter ones.
Wait, so even though the Supreme Court was like, apparent authority is the way to go, Illinois could have just said, nah, we're sticking with our own rule.
That's right. That's like the beauty of federalism, right? It's this back and forth between state and federal law, and often the states are the ones pushing for more individual rights. And this case is a perfect example of that.
Whoa, that's kind of mind-blowing. So even when the Supreme Court decides something, it's not always the last word for every state. It's like the states can be these little labs testing out different legal ideas.
Exactly. It creates this really dynamic legal landscape where states can, you know, push the limits of individual rights even further than the federal government. That's what makes studying law in the U.S. so interesting.
Now I see why this case is such a big deal. It's not just about the facts of the case. It's about this bigger question of, like, who has the power? The federal government or the states?
Exactly. Illinois v. Rodriguez really kicked off this whole discussion about the role of state constitutions in protecting individual freedoms. It's like a ripple effect, right? This one case had a huge impact, way beyond just the people involved.
And it shows how important it is to have those dissenting voices, like Justice Marshall. Even though he didn't, you know, win this time, his dissent keeps the conversation going. It reminds us that there are different ways to look at these tough questions.
For sure. Dissents can really shape how people think about the law. They make us look at the holes in the majority opinion, you know, and think about other points of view. Marshall's dissent here is a good reminder that protecting privacy, it's a constant fight, and we can't just assume the courts will always make the right call.
So even though the Supreme Court decided in favor of this apparent authority thing, Marshall's dissent, it keeps the debate alive about, you know, how far consent can go as an exception to the warrant requirement.
Exactly. Illinois v. Rodriguez didn't end the conversation. It actually made it, you know, even bigger. And that's what makes studying law so cool. It's not just memorizing rules. It's about understanding how those rules change, how they adapt to new situations.
It's like this case just threw this giant question mark into the legal system, and courts are still working on the answer.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It makes you realize that, you know, even precedents, they're never really settled. They're always being tested and refined as we learn more about the Constitution and how it applies today.
Okay, so we've covered this whole state versus federal law thing and how this case keeps the debate about the consent exception going. But there's one thing I'm still wondering about. What happened to Rodriguez? The case went back to the lower courts, right? Did they ever figure out if the officers were actually reasonable in believing Fisher?
That's a great question. And while the details of what happened after the remand aren't, you know, super well known, those old court records can be tough to find. It brings up a really important point for anyone practicing law, especially in criminal defense.
Okay, tell me more. What's the big takeaway here? So the case went back down, back to the lower courts. What'd they do? Did they decide if those officers were really acting reasonably or not with Fisher?
Well, like I said, the specific records from what happened after the remand, they're not easy to come by. You know, those older cases can be a pain to track down. But even without knowing exactly how it turned out, it's a good example of how this apparent authority rule actually works, you know, when you apply it.
Right, because the Supreme Court didn't decide the whole case. They just kind of said, hey, lower courts, you figured it out with this new rule.
Yeah, exactly. So the lower court would have had to look at everything, you know, Fisher having the key, calling the apartment hours, her stuff being there, and weigh all that against Rodriguez's expectation of privacy. They had to decide, based on all those facts, if the officers were really objectively reasonable.
So it's like it all comes down to the specifics of the case, right? Like one little detail could change everything.
Absolutely. That's what makes cases about warrantless searches so tricky and so interesting. You really gotta, you know, dig into the facts, understand all the nuances of the law, and then build a strong argument for your client.
It makes you think, what if you were Rodriguez? The cops show up, someone who doesn't even live there says it's okay for them to come in, and all of a sudden your home is being searched. Like, what do you do?
Yeah, that's a tough spot. And look, I'm not giving legal advice or anything here. But I will say, knowing your rights is so important. The Fourth Amendment protects you from unreasonable searches, and that includes when it comes to, third-party consent. If you're ever in a situation where you're not sure what your rights are, the best thing you can do is talk to a lawyer.
So if the police are at your door and things just feel weird, ask for a lawyer. Got it.
Exactly. Understanding your rights and using them, it's crucial.
Well, I think we really went deep on Illinois v. Rodriguez today. What are some of the key takeaways you think our listeners should remember?
This case really shows us how the Supreme Court tries to balance those competing interests, right? Protecting people's privacy, but also letting law enforcement do what they need to do. It also highlights that reasonableness standard that's so important in Fourth Amendment law. And finally, it's a reminder that legal issues are often really complicated and they depend on the facts of each case. The outcome can change based on, even the tiniest detail.
It's also a great example of how state constitutions can sometimes offer even more protection than the federal one, right? Like a safety net for your rights.
You got it. People forget about those state-level protections sometimes, but they can be really powerful tools for protecting individual rights.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Illinois v. Rodriguez. It's been a really interesting journey, exploring all the twists and turns of this case and how it changed Fourth Amendment law.
It was my pleasure. I always enjoy breaking down these important cases and, shedding some light on how the legal system works.
And to all our listeners, keep those legal minds sharp and keep exploring the amazing world of law. We'll see you next time.